Yeah, thanks, man. Okay, yeah. Yeah, catch you later. Bye.
I had a dream the other night that, well, I didn't understand. A figure walked in through the mist with a flintlock in his hand. His clothes were torn and dirty as he stood there by my bed. He took off his three-cornered hat, and speaking low to me, he said, "We fought a revolution to secure our liberty. We wrote the Constitution as a shield from tyranny. For future generations, this legacy we gave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. The freedoms we secured for you, we hoped you'd always keep. But tyrants labored endlessly while your parents were asleep. Your freedom's gone, your courage lost, you're no more than a slave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. You buy permits to travel and permits to own a gun. Permits to start a business or to build a place for one. On land that you believe you own, you pay a yearly rent. Although you have no voice in saying how the money's spent. Your children must attend a school that doesn't educate. And your Christian values can't be taught according to the state. You read about the current news in a regulated press. And you pay a tax you do not owe to please the IRS. Your money is no longer made of silver nor of gold. You trade your wealth for paper so your life can be controlled. You pay for crimes that make our nation turn from God in shame. You've taken Satan's number. You've traded in your name. You've given government control to those who do you harm so they could burn down churches and seize the family farm and keep our country deep in debt. Put men of God in jail. Harass your fellow countrymen while corrupted courts prevail. Your public servants don't uphold the solemn oaths they've sworn. And your daughters visit doctors so their children won't be born. Your leaders send artillery and guns to foreign shores and send your sons to slaughter fighting other people's wars. Can you regain the freedoms for which we fought and died? Or don't you have the courage or the faith to stand with pride? And are there no more values for which you'll fight to save? Or do you wish your children to live in fear and be a slave? Oh, sons of the Republic, arise, take a stand. Defend the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Preserve our great republic and each God-given right. And pray to God to keep the torch of freedom burning bright. As I awoke, he'd vanished in the mist from whence he came. His words were true. We are not free, but we have ourselves to blame. For even now, as tyrants trample each God-given right, we only watch and tremble, too afraid to stand and fight. If he stood by your bedside in a dream while you were asleep and wondered what remains of the freedoms he'd fought to keep, what would be your answer if he called out from the grave? Is this still the land of the free and home of the brave? God bless you, and God bless this republic.
Well, is this still the land of the free and the home of the brave? I say a resounding yes, it is.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Elaine. How are you?
You're doing good. How are you?
I'm well. I'm pumped up. I'm looking at all this situation and everything that's going on. And I sat down last night and did a long, hard think, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You get yourself away and you sit down and you take a look, you put a pad of paper next to you and you pray and you ask for wisdom, you ask for truth, and you just, you know, what's going on? What are the crucial issues? Because one of the things I've always believed in, and that is striking at the root of the problem, cutting through to the premises. If you attack the premises, that's what everything is founded on. You know, the building, it's like the foundation. And if we can identify the false premises and identify what's really going on behind the scenes, we have a shot at fixing and changing things. So, anyway, folks, Tim Wingate here on RBN with Elaine Brown. We'll be back after these messages.
thank you so much for all your help.
All right, welcome back, America. Tim Wingate, here on the Elaine and Ed Brown Show here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And we have Elaine with us today. So what is what's new and exciting? I heard you've had all kinds of wonderful things, and just to let people know, they can go to showthelaw.com, and they can also go to showedthelaw.blogspot.com and take a look at some of the videos, the stories on the trailer shaking and the shots fired, and then the media's denial that apparently anything happened. And
apparently our illustrious police chief, Gordon Gillins, made the statement that it was all fabricated.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. It was in the New Hampshire paper yesterday. He said it was all a fabrication.
Okay.
And I think that's amazing he could determine that, seeing that he wasn't here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Danny Riley is in the middle of all this again, you know, so, you know, there seems to be a pattern and a practice here.
I know, poor Danny, huh? Every time you come, something happens. Poor guy.
But look, there. I know there's military minds there, and
right.
I know people are looking at this and saying, you know, we're not sure exactly what happened. Could have been kids, but then on the other hand,
could have been
exploratory. I'll tell you this much. I know young teenagers, you know, well, not young teenagers, older teenagers, 20-something, sometimes they don't have anything else to do, you know. It's like, let's go hassle the crazy cat lady, bang on her windows, and see if she comes out in her bathrobe yelling at us with a rolling pin, you know, type of thing. Kids will do stuff. But then on the other hand, it could have been another one of those exploratory missions to see what kind of response.
Right.
And I do believe that there was some evidence of website tampering.
Yes.
Almost simultaneously.
Yes.
So.
And of course, earlier that day, Chief Gillins had his car parked across my driveway, blocking my driveway. And when he was questioned about it later, his response, well, because once he was noticed doing that, he peeled out and left a really big peel-out mark digging up the gravel road out there. And when he was questioned about it later, he said he was just marking the road so that he could then count how many tire marks went across his skid mark to determine how many cars were coming in here, because his car counter was with a disappearing act, you know, at the concert that we had. Makes
right,
a whole lot of sense to me. But.
I know. Well, the poor man. I mean, he just, you know, he seems to be fit to be tied. I mean that literally out there.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, before we get going too far here, I wanted to let's start off with our with a Bush joke. How's that sound?
Oh, here we go.
You ready to go?
I'm ready. Go for it.
He ceded power to Cheney for a little while he went in and he had his, you know, they had the camera stuck up his butt to check and make sure if he's, you know, got any problems, you know, in there. And so while he was out and temporarily deposed or whatever you want to call it, he was out a little bit, you know. And while they were doing that, they also did a brain scan on him. And after, of course, you know, we all heard about, you know, that he had some polyps removed and, you know, this usual typical type of stuff, which I've often wondered if, you know, since every president seems to have this, are they inserting something up there, you know, to keep track of them? And I don't know. But anyway.
You're not going to tell me they mistook the polyps for his brain, are you?
No. But, what we didn't hear is that the results of his brain scan, and the doctor said to him, Mr. President, I have some bad news for you. First, we've discovered that your brain has two sides, the left side and the right side. And President Bush interrupted. Well, that's normal, isn't it? I thought everybody had two sides to their brain. The doctor responded, well, that's true, Mr. President, but your brain is very unusual because on the left side, there isn't anything right, while on the right side, there isn't anything left. Okay, little play on words there. Okay. If you will indulge me then, dear. Remember we talked about Cheney taking power? Well,
yeah.
And control. Well, the last time he had this this thing done was or so was back in the winter time, and when he got up and looked out the White House window after he came back from the hospital and all the other stuff, he saw the president sucks written in the snow, and it looked like in urine. Furious, he called the FBI and the Secret Service, demanded to know who it was. Later, the Secret Service returned and says, well, I've got some good news and some bad news for you on who wrote that. And he says, well, give it to me. He says, well, the urine's been analyzed, and it's the vice president's urine. He goes, well, okay, so what's the bad news? And the agent says, it was Laura Bush's writing.
You're bad.
I know. I can't help it. But anyway, I just thought we'd pop in with this kind of thing because, you know, a lot of times people get all negative and down, and it's just fun. You know, ridicule is one of the best tools. In fact, that's why many tyrants and tyrannical nations will outlaw ridicule. They'll outlaw political cartoons. You look at you can tell where there is tyranny when you have censorship and a free exchange of ideas.
Sure.
And one way to censor somebody is to limit their being able to print or publish or say anything that they want to do. Now, recently, you might not be aware of this, but New Zealand, the government of New Zealand, which at this point in time I always thought was a decent place to live, still probably is a good place to live. Beautiful. No native mosquitoes there. This kind of thing. Long story short, they outlawed in New Zealand recently, they outlawed the publishing of any ridicule of the members of their government, their parliament. No depreciating remarks.
No depreciating remarks.
From that means political cartoons or commentary, ridiculing commentary.
Yeah.
Which is rather strange. And, you know, in New Zealand has got a whole bunch of different issues, and I'm not even going to try and get into any of those things. But the point is, why do that? So once there must be something to hide. And that's, I think that's kind of what we're dealing with in the bigger picture, is that what is hiding behind the scenes? Who's hiding behind the scenes? Now, we know what Ed believes. And Ed's belief and your belief is based on years of study and information, based on your own education. And, you know, that there is an Illuminati, that there are some people behind the scenes that are pulling the strings. So we look at the situation with you out there and we go, okay, so why are these shots being fired in the middle of the night? Why does this police guy, you know, have such a hard on for you guys? You know, he's just mad. He's just angry. He has to do anything. And the silliness of laying down tire tracks so then he can count the number of tires that go across. Since when did he become, you know, the great tracker of the Northeast?
Yeah, last of the Mohicans.
You know, is he Deer Slayer or the Deer Slayer?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Just as a note of interest, Tim, right here today, we have two journalists
Yeah, I can hear them in the background.
Right. They work for a German newspaper, or television, I guess it is. The gentleman is originally from Poland and is stationed in New York. And the young lady just flew in last night from Germany to New York and met with this gentleman. And they flew into Boston and just drove up here. And
wow.
So here for an interview all the way from Germany.
Excellent. Getting worldwide exposure.
Well, you know, it was in the newspaper on, I guess it was Monday, that the 911 was overwhelmed with calls to the point of being shut down. People calling in from all over the world concerned about the situation here Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why you guys are. That's why you people are dangerous, and you're.
Oh yeah.
What did they call you? What did they call you? That you're a nuisance now, right?
Public danger, I guess, because people with real emergencies couldn't get through to 911.
Uh huh.
So I guess we're public danger now.
Well, you know,
we didn't call 911. You know.
Yeah. Anytime anybody stands up for their rights, they are considered a potential public danger by our rogue government. And I think that's one of the things I'd like to talk a little bit about as we go on with this the rest of the hour here, is the nature of government and the illegitimacy of government as we have it today. Anyway, we'll be back after the break, folks. Tim Wingate and Elaine here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Rally from the hillside, gather from the plain, shouting the battle cry.
Here, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Tim Wingate, Elaine Brown here. So, anyway, Elaine, anything else going on that we need to update everybody with?
No, thank goodness.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we've got
about eight people standing around here with us right now, and just having a nice chat. And
that's great.
A group from Michigan called Peacemakers.
Uh-huh.
It's Michigan. They have a ministry out there.
Right.
And they're here with us for a few days, and they're just delightful people, wonderful spiritual people.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
That's good. I'm not familiar with their group. The name is fairly common among various Christian groups. And I know some of the peacemaker groups I've encountered have been a reconciliation type of ministry where they try to get people who supposedly or at least claim that they're Christian to reconcile their differences amicably, and they will offer to step in and mediate. Now, I don't know if that's this group, there are groups like something like
well,
that.
This group, they work with, I think, former addicts and people who have been released from prison who have come to Christianity and seem to be doing some really nice stuff. And you know, Tim, this is just a few of the wonderful, wonderful friends we have made that we would never have met had we not started on this journey.
That's true.
I'm just so grateful for this. It's just opened my eyes to so many people to see how much generosity and kindness and love there is out there in this world.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
The remnant is out there. Those of us who have not bowed or are no longer bowing our knee to the state, if you will.
Yes.
Those of us who have shrugged it off and said, enough, we're no longer going to participate on your terms. I'll participate on my terms, but I won't necessarily participate on terms that are forced upon me at the at the barrel of a gun.
Right.
That's coercion, and any form of government that is using that kind of coercion is illegitimate.
Absolutely, Tim. Yep.
You know, we have a big enough and a wonderful enough country here. And, yes, past mistakes have been made in the governance, and usually it has been government policy. And that government policy, whether it was manifest destiny, whether it was slavery, whether it was a enforcement of the letter of the law and not understanding the spirit of the law, whatever manifestation of this of government that has been abusive was not, it does not speak to we the people. It's not us that have done that, and that's not what's in most of our hearts. You know, we have such a beautiful, great nation, full of natural resources. We could be the light to the world. We have been the light to the world. The problem The problem is that it's been corrupted. It's been corrupted by evil people who have decided that they're going to that they have the divine right to rule as kings on this planet. Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that, they have to bring the United States to its knees.
Right.
I get into conversations with folks because I've been a political activist in my past. Now I consider myself a liberty activist because it's not just politics. Politics is part of it, but it's not just politics. And folks, if you are just hoping, putting all your hope and your trust into the Ron Paul egg basket, you're making a mistake. Now, I like Ron Paul. I think I think he is the absolute least of all the evils that are out there. Now, I'm not going to say that even Ron Paul is evil, but in a perfect society, we can't have a perfect society because none of us are perfect, you know. So it's not going to work. But in the best case scenario, Ron Paul wouldn't be having this difficulty. We wouldn't even be talking about Ron Paul being such a difference and an exception to everything else there out there if we had had free and open elections that haven't been, shall we say, subjugated by material interests of the secret government powers, the military-industrial complex, whoever and whatever that is, the people, the international marketing people, the people with the that basically you track it back, you follow the money, and it ends up being the same top families that have been, if you will, that have been causing problems for centuries on this planet.
Yes.
So it's what I've learned is that if we look to the law of liberty and to be free, and to be free indeed, you have to shrug off that whole concept of government. You have to understand that government is nothing more than a group of people getting together and agreeing together that one of them will take this area of responsibility, another one will take that area of responsibility, and somebody else will take another area. And simply by that agreement, that creates government. And that's all human beings have ever done. It's when you force your neighbors to do what you say under penalty of death, it becomes evil. We'll be back after the break with Elaine and Tim on RBN. Welcome back, America, to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Tim and Elaine here on the show, talking a little bit about government. Elaine, how did you come to understanding that government was not your friend?
Well, I guess when they start disobeying their own laws, that's one good clue.
There you go.
And as you were saying earlier, forcing their way upon we, the sovereign, at the point of a gun, that's another good clue.
Now, there were times, I mean, you went to dental school, you followed the rules and the procedures, the practices, you were licensed, you had a thriving dental practice.
Yeah.
And there is a procedure on doing that. You were compliant with
right.
those kinds of things.
Yep, I was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it came to a point then in your own life that you said, well, wait a minute. You know, some of this is legitimate and some of this
yeah.
isn't legitimate.
Right.
And
right.
As you pointed out, what really it seems to me, if I could just coin the phrase, you realize it was hypocritical.
Mm. Well, in my own profession alone, Tim, the issue of mercury fillings and fluoride really started to disturb me many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And through my research, I decided, no, these things are toxins. I'm not going to put these into my patients. And I have not used either one in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I remove a lot of mercury fillings, but I sure don't place any.
Uh-huh.
And none of my patients has ever had, well, in the past 10 years, has ever had a fluoride treatment or had fluoride prescribed for them. And do you know what the overwhelming response of parents is when I tell them that their child will not get fluoride here? Their response is, thank you. I always wondered about that.
Yes, that's
yep.
absolutely true. People have been talking uh-huh. about that for years. I think there is plenty of information on the Internet that
oh, yeah.
you could
yeah.
go to download the information. I remember in the 50s or early 60s when my father was by our town was forced to hook up to the city water and the city sewer
yeah.
situation as the Minneapolis area started to expand and they became more modern. Well, we had a well, and our well water was sweet. It was wonderful,
mm-hmm.
High in minerals. We never had cavities in our
right.
in our teeth. Mm-hmm. Drinking the natural, good old well water.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was when we were forced into using the treated fluoride-ridden mm-hmm. water, that's when cavities started to
right.
to appear. And it was like, well, wait a minute, I thought this wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it did not necessarily, and my parents were almost Nazis about brushing your teeth and taking care of them. Partially because my dad was cheap and didn't want to pay dental bills, but, you know. I mean,
that's as good a reason as any.
That's as good a reason as any. So I've often wondered, you know, there have been all these talks about that we don't really need fluoride. In fact, there are ways of treating the teeth that modern dentistry is just completely ignoring because it's not as financially prosperous for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, I mean, first and foremost is diet and home care. That's number one, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sweetener out there. It's called Xylitol, X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. You can go online to Xylitol and get some of their products. It's a natural sweetener from a tree. And not only does it not cause decay, but it actually helps retard tooth decay.
Mm. It does something
yeah.
to the acidic content of the saliva, I understand.
I'm not exactly sure what the actual mechanics of it is, but uh-huh. that's what it is. But, you know, talking about the water supply is interesting because 10 years ago or 11 years ago when we were building the office building where my dental business was, that property was not on city water. It was on a well. It was just a fluky thing because that building was originally an old farmhouse.
Uh-huh.
And the city kind of grew up around it. And so when we were putting the big addition on the building for my office, the city fought us tooth and nail wanting us to hook up to the city water, which we absolutely refused to do. And we actually won that issue because to this day it's on a well. It's not on city water.
Well, now that the feds have it, I suppose they'll switch over eventually, huh?
Well, I don't know. They've taken it over, but we'll see what happens with it.
Right.
Yeah.
See if that kind of thing lasts. Well,
yeah.
The point is, folks, is that government, as I was saying before the break, is really nothing more than you and your neighbors sitting down together and deciding how we're going to run the neighborhood. And if there are things that need to be done on a neighborhood level. And it's usually done by the cooperation of the neighbors all working together.
Right.
The problem is, as we said, is that when somebody decides that coercion is the way that you get the non-compliant to cooperate, and you use coercion, you know, ultimately it's we'll kill you if you don't do it our way, but other times it's blockading them or not letting them use residential facilities. I mean, these kinds of things. You can create your own analogy in this. But you take that and you extend it to a national level, and you realize that the anti-federalists had it right to the framers. They like, who are you to speak for the rest of us?
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, they thought they would try the experiment with this constitutional limited government in a Republican form at the time, where you had representative democracy, which they were used to, came out of an old English tradition. It was something that went all the way back to Magna Carta. And humankinds will work together, and we have seen throughout history the evidence of bad governments, and we've seen some good governments. Our experiment here was to be the best. And I still feel that, in general, the Constitution of 1789 was probably one of the best documents that was ever created by the minds of men. Problem was, of course, is that it had some glaring loopholes, which by this time in our lives, in our country's life, they have been exploited to the extreme. And we have seen where our representatives, our elected representatives, have decided that, well, you know, it's too much for us to actually do all this work. We're just going to pass it off to another agency. We'll create an agency such as the Postal Service, or we'll allow a banking cartel to handle the money, such as the Federal Reserve System. Oh, well, you know, we've got our favorite munitions contractors, and we'll give them you know, kind of a better deal on things. And pretty soon, government ends up being corrupt because people aren't watching. And that's really what it comes right down to, mm-hmm. Elaine.
Exactly.
People aren't watching. People aren't paying attention. And one of the problems that I have had with the so-called patriot community over the years is that there's always this, and I know I'm saying this as an always, folks, and I mean it as an always. You, plainly and simply, there is the all-or-nothing thinking within the patriot community. It has to be all my way or it's the bad way. One or the other. And that's not what real life is all about. There are conditions. Now, specifically what I'm talking about, there are those who say completely drop out of the government, drop out of participating in our society. Well, that's only going to work for a few people. Some of us are saying, look, we're not necessarily against some applications of government. Our Declaration of Independence specifically spells out that the function of government, the main function of government, is to protect those unalienable rights mm-hmm. of the people.
Right.
And that, and specifically when that government comes to the point where it is no longer protecting the rights of those people who created that government have a right to reorganize that government. Or in fact, in the Declaration it says alter or abolish
mm-hmm.
and reinstitute a form of government that will do the job. We're at that stage now.
Yes,
and I think
sure
you and Ed are right on the our running point, are on the razor's edge of doing this, and this is why it is so important for you out there, remnant in America, those who believe in liberty, those who believe in freedom, those who in your heart of hearts, deep inside of you, you know that there is the potential for America to be good once again. You know, it was Alexis de Tocqueville, I believe, who said that America is great because America is good. America, at least in the operation of its government, to great extent, is no longer good. And It needs to change. But the only way it's going to change is that if you out there who love liberty, who love freedom, who love justice, are willing to stand up and say enough's enough and become a leader in your community, because all of this happens on the grassroots level, folks.
Right.
Edna Lane's feet are on the ground right there where they live in Plainfield. Where do you live? What are you doing in your locality to change things? Are you waiting for some big patriot movement to somehow spring up out of nothing and create the environment that you can come out of the shadows and finally stand up for something when it doesn't cost you anything? That's not patriotism. You have to stand up. Now, I know there are some people out there who said, well, who the hell are you, Wingate? Hey, you know, just Google me. Google SeizeLiberty.com if you want to. You can go there. You can see what we've done. I've marched. I've stood up. I've been out there. I've confronted government in my locality. And I've suffered the consequences of doing that as well. And I continue to. And I'm not complaining about it. That's part of the deal. Just like with Edna Lane. They stood up. They said, enough's enough. We're not playing this game anymore. We're going to boycott the system because the system is completely corrupt. And until things get reorganized and fixed and changed, we're not going to participate. We'd rather be dead. We'd rather live free or die.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or death. Go ahead, Elaine.
Right. I just wanted to, you know, confirm what you were just saying. If people would just take care of their own community. That's all. If that happened in every community in the country, our problems would be over. And like you said, you can't wait for one big, massive national movement to occur. It's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen that way.
It only happens on a local. Freedom and liberty begins on the local level. And this is
That's
why,
right.
folks, Ed and Elaine are an example of one way to do it. Not the only way, but it is one way. They were basically pushed into this corner. You out there, you're not necessarily maybe pushed into this corner. Are those gunfires, Elaine? Elaine?
Yeah, we're okay.
You're okay? Well, I hear gunfire.
We're okay. Yeah, okay.
Just
wait,
practicing?
Just the journalist from Germany wanted, because they don't have any familiarity with weapons, because they're not allowed over there.
Right.
So they just wanted a brief demonstration.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, as long as they're outgoing and not incoming. Speaking of which, America, you know, our Second Amendment rights are definitely, slowly but surely, incrementally being taken away, chipped away.
Yep.
In those states where it is lawful, and I mean it legal and lawful according to the state's laws, and I'm not asking anybody to strap on.
You know, Jeremiah, Elizabeth, and all of them.
Sorry, what? Elaine?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Were you talking to me or somebody else?
No, I'm sorry. I had to make a brief comment to someone else. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. It's hard for me to tell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay.
Long story short, folks, if it's legal for you to open carry in your state, you should start open carrying. It's that simple.
Oh, yeah.
If you can do it, you should do it. You need to exercise your rights, because if you don't exercise your rights, you stand in danger of losing them. Exercise every one of your rights to its maximum.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, a little feedback there. I don't advocate, folks, that if you're in a state where you've got all these complicated gun rules, that you strap on your weapon and you go into town and you try to make a show of it.
Yeah.
You're just going to end up wasting your time and spinning your wheels in a confrontational situation where you may not win, you may end up in jail, and you won't be able to do a whole lot of freedom fighting from jail.
Yeah.
But it is part of our history as far as that goes.
You know, right over the river in Vermont, Vermont is one of the, two or three states in the country that has no gun regulations at all.
Right.
You can, no permits are necessary on how you carry, which is how it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of our western states still have that ability for open carry. Now, I know there's a lot of people who fought for concealed carry, but I was always taught that an open carry gun society is a polite society.
Yeah.
So if you would like to have politeness in your life, you're talking to somebody who's got a gun on his, or her hip, you're going to be polite. Just think about how polite you usually are to police. Imagine.
I was just told a few days ago about this one town in Georgia.
Yes.
Where it's mandatory to have a weapon.
Yes.
And the crime rate is zero.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I forgot the name of it, but it comes up occasionally on some of the advertising here on RBN. So anyway, we will get into our last segment here, Elaine, after our break here. And I got a couple other things to say. And so we'll be back, folks, here on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Receive a free DVD with purchase.
All right, we're back, everybody. The Ed and Elaine Brown Show here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Tim Wingate, your co-host, talking with Elaine. Still with us, Elaine?
Yep.
Good, good. I don't know if you know this or not, but I teach a seminar, and I do a seminar on for liberty activists, and it's kind of been called a couple different names as I've tried to apply a little humor and things. I used to call it a Think Free to Live Free, based a little bit on Claire Wolfe's book by the same name, Monkey Wrenching for Liberty Activists. I have decided, as of recently, to change the name to Monkey Wrenching for Sons of Liberty, because I think we need to revitalize the concept of the Sons of Liberty throughout this country. I don't know how many of you out there know, but all you have to do is very simply Google the Sons of Liberty, and you will learn who they are, how they came to be, and what they were all about. Some people believe they started back in 1765, and just simply a group of shopkeepers that they started agitation against the Stamp Act. By the late 1770s, of course, they had evolved into a larger group. They worked together with groups called the Committees of Correspondence that communicated information throughout the colonies on British resistance. Sons of Liberty were the ones who were known for doing the Boston Tea Party. And I once again challenge you folks out there, because we're going to deal with this on Thursday some more. What would be a 21st century Boston Tea Party? What would be the equivalent of that?
Throw the feds in the harbor.
Throw the feds in the pick up. Well, those of us who still, well, that'd be all of us, unless you've completely dropped out of the system. We're all participatory.
You know who I mean.
Yeah, I know. The top people there. But this is a challenge, because on Thursday we're going to deal with things. Well, in the point I wanted to make, Elaine, is that in the seminar, what I do is I teach that you have four basic styles of resistance that people have. There's the agitator, the architect, the ghost, and the mole. Now, some of this is based on Claire Wolfe's book, which is in my Seize Liberty package, which, plug, here we go. All right. It's the freedomshenanigans.blogspot.com. And you can you can go to that and look for the Seize Liberty package. But her book that she has on the Liberty Outlaw Guide and, you know, the handbook for the Freedom Outlaw, as she calls them, there's a number of things in there. She goes into the different personality. I've added the architect because in my studies I've understood that there and learned that there are four basic personality types. And basically you have the agitator. That's the person who's out there all the time, in front, in the face of the system. You've got the architect who's a little bit more behind the scenes, doing a little more plotting and planning and looking at things, how they all interact together. You've got the ghost. That's the person who's completely out of the system, but they move in and out of the system without anybody hardly knowing that they're there. And then you've got the mole. You've got the mole who appears to be a good government employee, a good good citizen, so to speak, but yet they harbor those secret desires of freedom and liberty, and they're in a position to throw a monkey wrench, if you will, sometimes into the machinery. On Thursday, we'll be talking a little bit about these tactics for resistance, and I'm also going to be dealing with a little bit more here on some of this information from the Illuminati insider that defected fairly recently, a woman who was who goes by Savali as a pseudonym. We'll be talking about some of the things that she exposes and lets us know about who's really behind the scenes here, and then what can we do to fight against them. Because we all get so caught up in what, you know, Elaine, did you ever have hamsters?
Oh, yeah,
you ever
sure.
Seen a hamster wheel?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, politics, in many cases, is like a hamster wheel. A lot of activity, but you don't go anywhere.
Right.
And we don't need to be caught up into hamster wheel patriotism either, folks. There's some realistic and real things that we can do to change things. And one of them, of course, is to support Ed and Elaine. And to do that, please go to showthelaw.com and go to showedthelaw.blogspot.com. From there you will find other links to other sites and information about what Ed and Elaine need and what you can do to support them. So, Elaine, I'll be talking to you again on Thursday.
Thursday it is, Tim.
You have a great day. Bye, folks. Tim Wingate here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Have a great day.
Rally from the hillside, gather from the plain, shouting the battle cry of freedom.